everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I'm Kate Romero, your host this evening. And as usual, I'd like to thank Don Newsome and Seth over at BBS Radio for providing us with this wonderful platform to raise consciousness by using Hollywood and positive media. I have with me this evening a very, very special guest. All my guests are very special, but this one in particular, I really want you to pay close attention because he's only in town for a little while. We're trying to bring him back, but we can't say when that will be at this point. But after you finish hearing the show, you're going to want to know where you can get a ticket to see this person. About Leonard Jacobson. Leonard Jacobson is a spiritual teacher, a mystic, and a gifted healer who is deeply committed to helping others break through to the joyous experience of living in the now. Leonard is the author of 4 books, Words from Silence, Embracing the Present, Bridging Heaven and Earth, and his latest, Journey into Now. He has been running workshops and seminars for the past 25 years, offering inspiration and guidance to those on the path of spiritual awakening and enlightenment. In his books, tapes, seminars, and retreats, Leonard shares invaluable keys to enlightenment as well as an effective way to integrate higher consciousness into our everyday living. I would like for you to go to, I have a couple of websites for Leonard, and the first one is www.liberatingjesustheplay.com. That's LIBERATINGJESUSTHEPLAY.com. And the other one would be leonardjacobson.com. That's LEONARDJACOBSON.com. Both of these will be marvelous resources for you to learn more about what this wonderful man is doing. And without further ado, I would like to bring on Leonard Jacobson. Leonard, thank you for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I want to let our listeners know that you are doing the one-man show, Liberating Jesus, the play. And would you tell us where you're doing that play?
That's at the Edgemar Center for the Arts, 2437 Main Street, Santa Monica. And it's on this coming Friday, the 9th at 8 p.m., Saturday the 10th at 8 p.m., and Sunday the 11th at 2 p.m.
At 2 p.m., yes. So if there's still some seats left, right? I mean, it's
We're selling out quickly, but there are some seats through brownpapertickets.com, or they can access that through the play website, liberatingjesustheplay.com. Oh, there should be also a few seats available at the theater itself if they get there.
So if someone just shows up and wants to get in, they probably would be able to?
Well, you know, I don't know. I know closer to the time, but
right.
Our tickets are selling out really well. So if people are really interested, they should get onto that brown paper ticket.
Yeah, like right now. Brownpapertickets.com, that is?
Yeah, and you can find that through the Liberating Jesus, the play. .com, but you can go either way, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. So again, everybody, it's www.liberatingjesustheplay.com. And you'll see there a picture of Leonard, who gets to play JC, as I like to call him, Jesus Christ, correct?
Yes,
yes.
Jesus on stage, he's back, he's on stage, and he wants to set the record straight.
Absolutely. Now, that's so intriguing to me. I love that, and that got my attention so well because setting the record straight is a very, very important thing, at least for me and many, many, many others that I know. I was raised actually by atheist family and was born an indigo child, which means spiritually wide awake, when I was born with a burning desire and passion to raise consciousness and, you know, serve the world basically in any way that I can to help people learn to live in the now, which is your calling. And you used to be an attorney, which one would not equate to turning out to be what you've turned out to be and turned out to do. I find that to be fascinating. And there are a lot of myths and misnomers about Jesus and about what it was he was actually trying to say and do for all of us here. I believe that a lot of people take the Bible literally, and I know for myself when I went to Baptist churches and all of this, which I'm not saying anything bad about any of those people, I just know that a lot of the things I learned there did not work for me. They didn't feel right to me. And when I started looking at the Bible as a book of metaphors, things started to make more sense. So I would like for you to tell our listeners, Leonard, if you would, how you're setting the record straight. I mean, what would be the top key five things that would do that?
Wow, it's very, very challenging and very provocative. And again, I'm not seeking to offend anyone either.
Right.
However, in 1981, I had a series of very, very powerful spontaneous spiritual awakenings. And as a part of those awakenings, a whole lot of very, very intense revelations came through, which form, in a sense, the basis of this play. But essentially, what I'm saying in the play, what Jesus is saying from the stage, is that there has been tremendous misunderstanding about the true meaning of his words and his true message. And not only misunderstanding, but his words were, in a sense, and his teaching were, in a sense, deliberately altered. The story of his life was altered very, very early on after his death to attract followers. And so essentially what the play is saying, what I'm saying in the play, is that Jesus didn't come here in a way that we should, the only access to God is through him. He was basically here to reflect to us the truth of who we are and the truth of where God is. In other words, all that he says, all that I am, you are. God is within you. Wake up out of your mind, wake up out of your dream, wake up out of your illusions, wake up out of your beliefs, and realize, recognize who you are and where you are. So, you know, at the deepest level, he's reflecting to us who we are, because at that time, I mean, he's really addressing Jews at the time, who were essentially in that covenant with God. So from my perspective, Jesus appeared on the earth to help Jews fulfill their covenant with God. And the covenant, simply put, is, and this is in the play, is enter into right relationship with me, says God, and I will deliver you unto the promised land. So Jesus is there, in a sense, to demonstrate, to reveal to the Jews what that means. Where is the promised land? What is the promised land? How do we find it? What is it? And so, essentially, he's there to reflect to people, and it's still relevant today. I mean, that's what my teaching is also about, is, well, who are we really beyond our belief systems and the limitations of our mind and the way we're defined by our past? Who are we if we awaken fully into the present moment? Who are we if we release ourselves from the limitations of the past and all the limiting beliefs that have been, in a way, imposed upon us? Who are we? Where are we? What are we doing here?
Wonderful. Excellent. So basically, if I were to say to any person, what you see in me is yourself, that would be a truth that we are all connected, and that basically the promised land is to find out your true nature and to get back to your divinity, correct?
Yeah, well, quite accurately, the promised land is actually heaven revealed on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the true purpose of our journey as humans upon this planet. Ultimately, we're here as the redeemers of oneness and the revealers of heaven on earth. Now, that's only possible if we come so deeply into the present moment that the truth of what is here is revealed. It's as if the present moment has hidden treasures, hidden within it. And as we become more and more present, and as we really open up to what is actually here, we start to open up to those hidden treasures. As we become more and more present, we come out of the past and future world of the mind, we come into the realization of what is really here, we start to experience oneness rather than each of us living in our individual worlds of separation. We come out of our individual worlds of separation into the one world revealed through the present moment. This is where we realize oneness. And as we deepen into presence, we start to actually experience, direct experience, of the living presence of God in all things present. Now, when we come deeply, so deeply into presence that we literally feel and experience the presence of God in all things present, we no longer need to believe in God. There's no belief in God is essentially for those who don't know God. And so there's a deepening that we're all capable of. What I'm sharing is not out of our reach. It's very, very available, but as Jesus would say, only for those with ears to hear. Now, the ones who are locked firmly and rigidly into their beliefs, whether it's Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, it doesn't matter what it is, if you're firmly locked into beliefs and traditions and spiritual concepts and spiritual ideas, then you're denied the truth of what I'm saying. And that's the paradox. That's the difficulty. That's the struggle. The truth is beyond belief. The truth has no power to penetrate into the world of belief. Belief must dissolve of its own accord. These are some of the lines from the play.
Yes.
Belief must dissolve of its own accord before the truth will enter. And that's the dilemma we face as a species, a human species upon this planet. In our unconsciousness, we're becoming extremely destructive. And we're taking ourselves down a very dangerous path in our unconsciousness, where we have 6 billion people on this planet functioning as egos, and the basic position of the ego is me, 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 mine, 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 I'm right, I'm right, I'm right, what's in it for me, how do I use this, how can I take advantage of this? Well, when you have 6 billion egos living like this on the planet, we're going to pretty much finish up in the mess that we're in. And the only hope for humanity as I see it, and you, I'm sure you would see something similar, Kate, mm-hmm. The only hope is that we actually awaken out of our
slumber.
Out of our limited world.
Yes, yes, it is. It is like sleepwalking.
We're all in a dream. We are the dreamers dreaming that we're awake.
Right. So what I'm hearing, Leonard, is that to say we believe in God is not really knowing God.
That's exactly right. What I'm saying, what I say and what it says in the play is that to believe in God is to not know God. In fact, belief is an obstacle to knowing God.
Wow.
And that's very
concept.
That's very difficult for people to accept because
right.
Everyone, almost everyone on the planet is essentially functioning in a world of belief. We function in the past and future world of the mind, which is essentially illusory. It's remembered past, imagined future.
Mm-hmm.
And we support that as being real for us through our belief, by believing in it. In other words, the power of belief sustains us in illusion. And in order to come out of the world of illusion, we have to realize that our beliefs are illusory. They don't mean anything. There's no truth in belief. Belief is just an idea. It's a concept. It's a memory. It, most of the time, they're not even our beliefs. They were imposed upon us.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone listening wants to awaken, from my perspective, the only way that's possible is to become so utterly present that your mind falls silent. Thoughts stop, your mind falls silent. And when your mind falls silent, which is what happens when you're truly present, where are beliefs? Where are religion? Where's religion? Where's any of it? Where's philosophy? Where's psychology? Where's spirituality? Where's concepts? It all dissolves as we become so fully present that our thoughts stop. Our mind becomes silent. We emerge out of the past and future into the world of now. And as we deepen, as we settle in the world of now, then the truth of life, the truth of what is really here, the truth of God, the truth of love, the truth of who we are is revealed.
Mm.
And that's what that's for me, that's what awakening is.
Yes.
It doesn't make us special. It just, we're coming out of a world of illusion and now we're in the truth of life. It's so simple. And the good news is that we don't actually give up the world of illusion. We don't give up playing in the world of time. We just no longer believe in it as the truth.
Right.
In other words, I play in the world of time. I play in the world of the mind. Of course I do. But I am not of that world. Then which world are you of? I am of the world of now. And that's the final, that's the end of the story. That's the final step to true awakening. I am of the world of now, even as I play in the world of time.
One thing that would be a good thing to have is a wristwatch that just has the word now on it.
Well, I sometimes think that someone should invent that.
I think somebody did.
Well, that probably
no, I bought one from Dan Millman, but his has hands and numbers, but it does say the time is now on it, but so just to have now with no hands and no numbers would be a good idea. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I think we should also invent a little parrot, a little toy parrot that we put on our shoulders, on a shoulder, and it says every 1 minute, it says, be present, be present.
Right, and some people would strangle that parrot.
That's right. You see, we're so habituated to living in the mind, and I'm not against the mind in any way. I don't judge anything, but we're so habituated that most people don't know how. I mean, most people, if I said to your listening audience, just close your eyes and be still for 60 seconds without any thoughts. There's very few people that could happen for.
Mm-hmm.
Most people's thoughts don't stop, and so what's going on? What we're actually enslaved in the world of the mind. The ego runs our show. We're imprisoned in a sense within the mind by the ego. The thoughts never stop, and we're consistently living somewhere in the past or future, and not really in the present moment. And you don't really know that until you become present. Then you can experience the difference. You go, wow, amazing. Where have I been?
What kind of impact would that have on relationships, Leonard,
being that present? Yes, it completely transforms relationships, because most of our relationships become dysfunctional because our unresolved past is in a sense projecting into the relationship from both sides. You know, I'm projecting my mother onto my partner. She's projecting her father, unresolved issues, hurts from childhood. All of these things play out. Needs, unresolved needs, fears, all of these unresolved issues from the past play into our relationships and they become essentially dysfunctional. Now, when we're present, really present, and we don't get present instantly. I mean, there's a process to settle into presence. But the past is no longer projecting in. It's both fundamentally just grounded in the present moment, enjoying the present moment. You're not being pulled out all the time into past wounds or past limitations or limiting beliefs from the past. It's just simpler. It's much simpler. And at the deepest level, I could say this to you, Kate. If I am present, then I am love. If you are present, you are love. That's, to me, unquestionable. Now, if I'm present and I'm love and you're present and you are love, why the heck do I need you to love me?
Hmm.
We lose it. One of the great ways we lose ourselves in our need for others to love us or accept us or approve of us or acknowledge us. This is how we lose ourselves in the other. Then we become hopelessly caught up, entangled in each other, and we lose ourselves even more.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm present, I am love. I am here. If you're present, you are love. You are here. You are strength. You are clarity. You are power. You are truth. You are silence.
Mm-hmm.
What's the problem? There's no problem anymore. And you hang out together because it feels good and it's beautiful to share a present and loving life with another.
Yeah.
Why would you want to give that up?
Right. And it's worth everything to achieve as well. And what I'm hearing you say, Leonard, is that we have in our minds basically 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, projectors going that are just projecting pictures on our mind from the past, from the future, anywhere but the now, and only occasionally we get a now. I think we have a caller.
Yes, I heard that beep.
So I'll quickly say, if we turn off those projectors, that then gives us presence, correct?
Well, the projecting onto each other, which is what we do all the time, prevents us from being present.
Absolutely.
As we become present, the projections, in a sense, we have to reclaim our projections in order to become present.
Okay. Now, hold that thought for a second. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Who's calling?
This is Michael from Melbourne Village.
Hi, Michael. Thank you.
Okay, I wanted to know if you wanted to do something.
What's that?
I can go into the silence whenever I want to, and I can beam the silence to everyone, and you guys can keep talking and just see what effect it has on people. Because that is the state of the observer where absolutely nothing's going on, which is the state of all times and the state of now.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that's right. So
are you feeling it?
What's that?
Are you feeling it?
Well, I'd rather feel my own presence than yours.
Well, no, it's not a question. It's everybody's presence.
I'd rather feel the presence of the door handle because that's here in front of me. The only way we can truly be present and come out of the mind is to be present with what is here. And then when we're truly present, we don't really have any need to go and save anyone else or share our presence with anyone else. That's coming from the mind and ego.
No, it's
so,
not.
But presence
no, actually,
is such
it's beyond the mind and the ego. It is only the state of the observer. And the state of the observer is the state of divine consciousness.
Who is observing? These are all thoughts and concepts, but they're very good thoughts and concepts, and I appreciate you sharing them.
Okay, thank you, caller.
Have a wonderful night, and I've actually
thank
been
you.
Sharing it.
Thank you.
Do you get what I was saying by that, Kate, or not?
Well, I want to review it just for a second. What I was getting at was, so what's keeping us from being present is the projecting of the past and the future because we're not being in the now.
That's right.
Onto our mind, and that's keeping us from being present. So if we shut down those projectors, then we can have the stillness and the silence and the quiet and stop projecting the past and the future and be in the now and to be amongst others who are also in the now and have shut down their projectors from the past or the future.
Yes.
That is just allowing ourselves to be pure love, and we hang out together because we enjoy being present with one another and there's nowhere to get.
That's exactly right.
That's what I thought.
The question that arises out of what you're saying is, well, how do we shut down those projectors?
Yes.
Because if you can't actually shut them down, it won't work. What you can do, though, and this is what I part of my teaching, is that from presence, you can be a witness to those projections. You literally own the projections as they're occurring. You own it, acknowledge it, identify it, confess it. And then slowly, slowly, as you go through that process of owning and acknowledging and confessing them as they arise, they all relax. Everything then it relaxes and it stops projecting. But you can't actually stop it willfully. All you can do is reveal it. It's like Jesus said, all that is hidden shall be revealed. And so we have to bring, true awakening involves bringing into consciousness all that has previously been unconscious within us. And for the most part, our projections are unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, say my father was very judgmental when I was a child, and then I'm out in the world and my boss or my wife or my friend says something that actually is not judgmental in any way, but I project onto them that judgment, and all of a sudden I feel judged, I feel angry, I feel hurt, I judge back, right? I'm caught in my projection from my past. Now, how do I bring that to consciousness? How do I free myself? Just by owning that that's what I'm doing. We have to keep revealing everything into consciousness. And then those projections gradually relax as they encounter the energy of love and acceptance, which is your true presence. You see, the thing about awakening, Kate, and I'm sure you know all this, but the thing about awakening is that we're already completely awake and whole and enlightened. It's not something that we can add to. It's something that's already full and whole and complete within us. It's about revealing that which is hidden within us. We're disconnected from the truth of who we are, who we've always been and who we always will be, by getting too involved, too caught in the past and future world of the thinking mind. It's a little bit like tuning a radio. You know, you could be tuned into one station that plays rock and roll, rock and roll, rock and roll. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with rock and roll. But you turn the dial a few times to the left and to the right, and suddenly you feel this beautiful, sacred music. It's always been there. It's just that you weren't tuned into it. That's what awakening is. How do we release ourselves from that unconscious radio station, that unconscious level that we're normally functioning at, which is the mind? How do we liberate ourselves from that and tune in to that which is already there? The present moment is already here. Everything is already here. The only ones who aren't here, who are not here, is humans living in the world of the mind, lost in the mind. Everything else on this earth is here in its fully awakened presence, in its beingness.
Yes, animals and plant life.
Everything.
Yes.
The sky, the animals, the trees, the mountains. Everything in existence on this earth is fully present and awake in its true nature, except for humanity. We've taken a sidetrack. We've gotten ourselves lost. We've gotten ourselves imprisoned in a world of illusion, and we believe in it as true. And we're afraid to come to let all that go, because it's fearful, it's painful. So we won't allow ourselves to come into the truth. There is a tremendous resistance to awakening. And the primary force of resistance is our own egos. Our egos do not want us to be present. Our egos want us to be held, imprisoned within the past and future and in the world of thought. The ego would rather have us, would rather have you in a painful past rather than in a blissful present. Because if you're in the painful past, it's still a part of your world, and it's still running your show, and it's still in control, and it still has a function in your life that it believes it needs to continue with.
Right.
So no one awakens truly unless we recognize what is the ego, how does it function, and how do we liberate ourselves from its dominance. And you cannot defeat the ego. No one in the history of the world has ever defeated the ego. Not Jesus, not Buddha, no one. The only way you bring the ego to a place of relaxation and surrender is through the energy of love and acceptance, which is only possible from presence.
Okay, I have a question for you. Thank you for that.
Yes.
My question is this. Now, I know one thing that I do works for me very well.
Yes.
Whenever I'm feeling out of sorts or the ego grabs hold of me and won't let me go and is kicking my behind, which happens because I am, it's the human condition.
Exactly.
And it's something you have to constantly regenerate over and over, moment by moment, to be present. It's not automatic. Even though we're innately born with it, we've been had it programmed out of ourselves. So we have to relearn how to do that. And it takes a lot of courage and a lot of will and a lot of allowing and acceptance to get to that place. Now, what works for me when I remember to do it, which is pretty often, when I'm feeling out of sorts, I just say I love you to every single thing that's bothering me. And in doing that, I've accepted it just by those three powerful words that completely dissolve it for that moment. And I say it to myself. And I say it, you know, under my breath to everything and everyone all day long, maybe 1,000 or more times a day.
Right.
And that does help me quite a bit. But I have a question for you about that.
Yeah.
For me, and I'll just be very transparent here and share this because I bet I speak for a lot of people in the audience listening. So I will say it. I was so, being born to an atheist family, so brainwashed to believe that to love myself was a sin and made me conceited, that to feel joyful was a waste of time when there was work to be done. To be happy while I was working was very weird and strange. So I noted that as I was growing up, my feeling good was taken away from me at every opportunity when someone caught me feeling good. Now, you take away one of those O's out of the word good, and you've got God. So what was taken from me is my only source of God, and that's the thing that hurt me the most of anything. So I find that even today, Leonard, as a grown-up with an absolutely phenomenal life, I am blessed beyond my wildest imaginings. I wake up in the morning and the first thing I feel is guilt for my joy. And I am starting to get to a place of gratitude for that guilt because I know when I feel guilty for feeling joyful that my life has been overcome with joy. Is that making sense?
Absolutely, yes.
It's a clue that I've really grown quite a bit. And the ego is trying to hang on to me for dear life and to get me to keep believing that I don't deserve that joy and that self-love and those feelings of happiness and oneness and to rid myself of separateness. Because the more connected I feel to others, the less separate I feel, the less isolated I am, and the more complete I feel. So do you have anything that you could say to anybody who might be going through such a thing themselves?
Well, you know, what you're describing really describes almost everyone. We were all in childhood, for the most part, so much was taken from us. Our right to be ourselves, our right to know what we want, our deep knowing that we can have what we want and be as we want, and to be joyful. I think pretty much everyone, including me, can relate to that in childhood. But again, the key for me is it always comes back to presence. I teach a two-step dance of awakening, Kate. Step number one, you've already been describing. As you say, I love you many times each day, right?
Mm-hmm.
and it releases you and it brings you into the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I can certainly understand why that would work for you. And pretty much the same thing, slightly different, would be to just bring yourself present many times each day, because each time you're truly present, you are love. And then you can, of course, say, I love you, but at the end of the day, the ego is very tenacious and it will keep pulling us out.
Mm-hmm.
Until we arise in mastery. So I teach a two-step dance of awakening. Step number one is remember presence many times each day when it's easy to be present. When you're going for a walk, that's when you choose to be present. When you're washing the dishes, when there's no need to be thinking,
mm-hmm.
when you're putting the garbage out, whenever there's no need to be thinking, then remember to be present with that which is already present. You can't be present by yourself. You can only be present by becoming very present and tuning into something that's here in the moment with you. The moment you're fully present with something that's here, if you can see it, hear it, feel it, taste it, touch it, or smell it in this moment, you can be present with it. The moment you're truly present, you're out of the mind. You're present now. And you'll feel the love. Then you could say to whatever's present, I love you. I'm not separate from you or whatever. I'm here now. Probably the best thing you could say is, I'm here now. And you'll feel the trees responding to you. They're happy. The trees, the flowers, the mountains, the sky, everything is waiting for someone to be here. And it actually responds when you're present. Say, I'm here now. And I love you. That'd be even better.
And the parrot says, get present, get present, get present. The parrot
in
the tree.
The trouble is you can't get present with the mind. It's not practice. It's a gentle remembering. It's very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Like tuning in. Now, that's the step one. Many times each day, we bring ourselves present in the easiest of ways. Don't try and be present when you're at work. Don't try and be present if you're triggered and you've got all these feelings coming up. Don't try and be present to escape the thought. It won't work. So, but when it's easier to be present and there's not much going on, then you'll be present. The second step is essential because we don't stay present. We're so habituated to going back into the mind. The second step involves bringing consciousness to all the ways we're involuntarily pulled out of presence, or what are the blocks to presence. And I've identified four ways which this occurs, and it's all very clearly set out in my latest book, Journey Into Now. But those four ways, very briefly, are the resistance of the ego, as I've spoken about, denial of who we've become. We have to learn how to accept our humanness and who we've become. In other words, if you feel guilty about your joy, right,
mm-hmm.
you can't get rid of that, but what you can do is own that and confess it and say, you just confess it. You just lie there in the morning and just say, I'm feeling guilty. I feel joy and I feel guilt about feeling joy. You're not against it. You're not for it. You're just acknowledging it with love. You're
mm-hmm.
acknowledging, wow, guilt is arising. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, in a sense, that it's the ego tricking you, because if you didn't feel guilty, you'd just feel joy, and then its job is up. It would have nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to. The ego needs you to feel guilty so you won't go too far into the love and too far into the presence.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the trick of the ego.
Well, I'm going to be writing a chapter called I Arm Wrestled My Ego and I Won.
There you go.
Because I have a world title in arm wrestling, and that's my main goal in life.
Do you really? Well,
I do, really. But the ego is fun.
Remind me not to arm wrestle you.
Pardon?
Remind me not to arm wrestle you.
I never challenge anybody, but I have self muscles. I can take care of myself if I have to. But to arm wrestle the ego is the match that I want to win. That is the one that I want to win. And
well, let me tell you, you will lose.
Well, don't bet any money on me then.
I'll tell you why you'll lose.
Tell me.
And what I'm saying is it's just very subtle. I'm really just playing with words here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I said before, you can't defeat the ego. You can't really arm wrestle the ego, because I'd say, who is defeating the ego? Who's trying to defeat the ego? Who's trying to arm wrestle the ego? It's the ego itself. The only thing that will bring the ego...
Oh, I get it. Thank you.
The only thing that will bring the ego to a place of relaxation and surrender, which is what has to happen, a voluntary surrender by the ego, the only thing that will bring that about is when the ego feels within you the energy of presence, the consciousness of presence arising, which is utterly without judgment, which is utterly loving and accepting, even of the ego. And what will happen is the ego will feel the flowering of presence within you, if that's what's happening,
mm-hmm.
and it will gradually begin to relax. In fact, at the very deeper and more mysterious level, I can say that the ego is actually waiting for the true master to arise, but it's been so long before the true master has arisen that the ego has forgotten that that's what it's waiting for. But it will know. The ego, just as God knows the true master, so does the ego. And the true master is without judgment. There is not one ounce of rejection of the ego in the true master. In fact, God and presence would say to the ego, my beloved, if you insist on sitting in the throne of God, you are allowed. Let me know when you're willing to let me awaken into the truth of life. The ego will not surrender to anything within you other than the true master. And the true master is revealed as the I am presence within you, the I am of you. That eternal silent presence that arises from the very center of your being as you relax into presence and become more and more grounded in presence and as you awaken into mastery.
That makes so much sense.
Yes, that's the true master. And very few people know this, what I'm sharing, that you cannot defeat the ego, you can't get rid of it. Even when you become fully enlightened and fully awakened in the eternal, the ego is not there with you when you're in those deep silent moments or minutes or hours or days, but when the moment you wish to participate in the world of time, which of course all of us do, then the ego is there. You don't eliminate the ego. The ego is not annihilated with enlightenment. It's transformed. It becomes a beloved and loving servant within the world of time, just as you, as an awakened being, are a servant of God. It becomes your servant. And it serves you beautifully and dutifully. It no longer then is trying to pull you out of presence.
Mm.
It's no longer trying to keep you in the pain so that it can continue its role as protector of you in a painful world of separation, which is the true purpose and role of the ego.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I can tell by everything that you're saying and where I'm at and what I'm experiencing in my own heart and mind on a daily basis that I'm getting closer and closer and closer as fast as I am present enough to become. But the more present I am and the more times that I choose that, the faster my evolution will be, correct?
Well, not exactly. Do you mind if I'm precise here or not?
Pardon?
It's not exactly correct. So you see, again, we have to learn what is the distinction between the me as ego and me as awakened presence. Very few people know that distinction, and if we don't know the distinction between what is ego and what is awakened presence, we'll never awaken. We have to know the distinction so that we don't become confused. So the truth is, for me, in my teaching, the only thing that is not ego is you utterly present in the moment of now, utterly present with what is here, your thoughts utterly silent, and you're fully awake, fully present. It's like an embrace of what is here in silent presence. That is the only thing that is not ego. But in that moment that I'm describing, this beautiful open presence that you are in this moment, there's no progress. It's complete. There's no past, no future. So the idea of making progress is actually still a part of the ego.
Oh my gosh, you got me again.
Well, that's my job.
Wow. Well, thank you. I'm so glad that I'm using myself here because I'm ready for this information or I wouldn't be getting it, would I?
No, you could. If you weren't ready, you couldn't hear it.
I couldn't, but I get totally that to even consider arm wrestling my ego is my ego arm wrestling my ego.
Exactly.
It's right on by my ego.
And the idea of making progress is the ego revealing itself. You can't make progress. If you're awake, you're just awake. That's it.
Wait, I have to do something.
That was easy.
I have an easy button. That was easy.
That was fantastic. Perfect.
Well, thank you, Leonard. That was amazing. I hope that everybody out there got what I just got. I really do, because I'm laughing because I feel such a release.
Well, that's beautiful.
And I will contemplate this later. You can count on it and just see what I can not do with it.
Yes. And you know,
because not doing something with it is the ego not doing anything with it.
Right. Well, that's right. You see, what happens is once you're present, fundamentally present in the way that I'm describing, your life becomes one of response rather than doing. You respond to the moment, and the response to the moment is actually what guides us through life.
Mm.
I mean, it's just, at the deepest level, it's as simple as, well, I'm in the present moment, I'm present, I feel thirsty. Okay, what's my response? Oh, I'll go and get a drink. And we live our lives responsively rather than doing and functioning from the mind. Now, it doesn't mean we've eliminated the mind. The mind is a very, very useful instrument. Without the mind, there's no time. We can't participate in time. There's no relationship. There's no work. So the mind is a wonderful friend. It's a wonderful instrument, as long as we're not lost in it.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be fundamentally present, free of the mind, transcendent of the mind and ego, and then we consciously choose to use that instrument, which is the mind, to play in the world of time. It's quite beautiful.
Oh, yes, it's wonderful. It's fantastic. It's you know, it's the when in hearing you mention the mind, I'm getting a very big image of it being a computer. And what
it
you put in is what you get out.
Exactly. But, you know, if it's a computer, which it is, don't you think we should have a very close look at how the computer has been programmed? A computer can only run according to its programs.
Yes, and it needs a virus then.
And the computer's got quite a few viruses
from
childhood.
A lot of bugs.
If you look at the programming for most of us in the mind, our minds, our computer minds, are programmed with belief systems like, I'm not loved, I'm not wanted, I'm not accepted, I'm not good enough, I can't do it, things like that, which actually run, as long as you're functioning at the mind, at the level of mind, at a very subtle level, those programs run through your life. There's no one here for me. If you have a program running from childhood that I'm not loved, it's amazing how we will attract into our lives people who don't know how to love.
Mm-hmm.
Because life has to match the programming within our mind.
Right.
So it's not a question of reprogramming the mind. It's a questioning it's really a question of coming to a dimension of us which is beyond the mind and beyond all those programs.
And then
we can come into right relationship with who we are at that level of mind.
Right.
When we come into right relationship with who we are at the level of mind from presence, that's where the alchemy occurs. It's me in presence coming into right relationship with me from my past and future, my ego, my wounded child, all those aspects of myself. The judgmental me, the hurt me, the victim me, whatever's there, the angry me, it's from presence. All of it is accepted. All of it is embraced with love and presence. And it is amazing how quickly the healing occurs. And then the past releases us. It releases us into the present, which is the whole point of it. For most people, we live with an unresolved past. I didn't get the love that I needed. I didn't get the acceptance that I needed. My needs were not met.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as if that unresolved past has us in its grip because it wants to be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
It won't give it up. In fact, one of the stories in my books and one of the stories I share in my teaching, it's a wonderful story and it's a true story that was related to me by someone. A woman was asleep and she was dreaming. And in the dream, she was on a train. And whilst on the train, she lost her two suitcases. And she started to look up and down all the carriages, looking for her suitcases, getting more and more panicky. Her dream was turning into a nightmare. She'd lost her suitcases. That was her problem. That was what was wrong. She'd lost her suitcases. And she was running up and down. It was turning into a terrible dream.
Mm-hmm.
Just then, a car drove past her bedroom and started to sound the horn, toot the horn. And she began to wake up out of her dream, and she was almost awake, and she thought to herself, I can't wake up yet. I haven't found my suitcases. She was about to go back into the dream to look for her suitcases when she realized, now, just a moment, if I wake up, I haven't lost my suitcases. I'm not on a train. It's just a dream. Now, in a way, that story represents why we're all lost. Our lost suitcases stem from our childhood. I didn't get the love I needed. I'm still looking for it. I didn't get the acceptance. I don't feel included. I don't feel successful. I don't feel worthy. And so they're our lost suitcases, and we won't wake up out of the dream because we still are looking for them.
Well, I got another... That's a very good point, Leonard. Thank you. I got another analogy out of your story, if you don't mind, I share it with you.
Please, yes.
I got that. She was looking everywhere for her lost suitcases. She was in a dream, and it was just fine until she lost her suitcases, and then she began to panic, and then it became a nightmare. Well, that's the way we all react when we think we're losing our baggage, because suitcases are baggage, and when we think we're about to lose the thing that causes us our pain, we panic.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's the analogy you got out of it. The suitcases are baggage, and they, for me, were a metaphor of how we panic when we're just about to go through our transformation, when we're just about to wake up.
And we don't want to let go of that baggage. The ego doesn't want to surrender the baggage.
Yeah, the nightmare is in the baggage. It's in the suitcases.
Right.
It's not by losing them. It's by having them.
Now, you know what's really interesting to carry on with that analogy is that if it was a happy dream and she didn't lose her suitcases, she probably would never have any motivation to awaken.
Mm.
So it's our pain and our suffering that motivates us to awaken out of the dream.
Yes.
Now, it doesn't have to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow we humans have made it so the only way there's any hope of us awakening out of our dream is through suffering. Who wants to awaken out of a happy dream? No one. So we're only motivated to awaken out of our suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But if we would just respond to the intelligence of what awakening really is through our intelligence, there doesn't have to be suffering. And I sum it all up in one sentence, Kate. It's this. In truth, there is no life outside of this moment. In truth, it is impossible to live outside of this moment. Sooner or later, we must all come to terms with that simple truth. That will guide us into being present. That will help us disidentify and let go of our involvement in our story. The story can stay, the dream can stay, but we must come out of it and become grounded in some dimension that's based in truth and reality, which is the present moment.
Right. Okay. So I would like to ask you this question, Leonard, and we're coming up on, we've got about 10, maybe 12 more minutes, but I want to ask you just to just give us your take on why it is that we are here.
Well, you know, there are many levels that I could respond from to that question. Essentially, as far as I'm concerned, the sole purpose in our being here, that's S-O-L-E, the sole purpose in our being here is to be here. The sole purpose, S-O-U-L, the sole purpose in our being here is to be here. That's actually our true purpose, is to actually be here, because by being here, we reveal what is really here. It's like, through us, it's like consciousness is reflecting consciousness to consciousness.
Mm, beautiful.
Existence basically exists eternally as eternal isness. There's no consciousness of itself. So our role as humans on a long and difficult journey has been to emerge from the oneness, which is eternal isness, which is God as eternal isness, oneness as eternal isness, emerge from the oneness into separation, to journey through many, many lifetimes of separation, ultimately to return to oneness. It's somehow in that vibration of our return that God gets to know itself, isness gets to know itself. So we're here basically as the revealers of heaven on earth, the redeemers of oneness.
Okay.
Consciousness reflecting consciousness to itself.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. I so totally get it. I have a vision for myself and something that I aspire to and always have, and I want to know your take on it. I want to vibrate at the frequency of God, and I can't think of anything that would be better than that or more wonderful than that, and that's what I aspire to. How do you feel about that?
I could not think of anything better to aspire to.
That is exactly the way I feel about it. That is my goal in this lifetime, to achieve that, to help others achieve that.
Let me do a little fine-tuning here.
Yes.
May I?
Yes,
okay.
Please.
So as long as that's your goal, you will never get there.
Okay.
As long as you aspire to achieve it, you won't get there. You have to realize and recognize that the only moment you can vibrate at the consciousness of God is the moment of now. It can't happen at any moment in the future. You'll never get there as long as you see it as something you aspire to.
Got it.
But what can happen is, in this moment, this very moment, or simply by becoming beautifully, deeply present, just for a few moments, you will vibrate at that level of God consciousness. It can only occur now, not in the future.
That is fantastic. I have what I call God bumps all over me from that. That's really fantastic. Thank you, Leonard, for sharing that. Just before we go, I would like for you to give just a thumbnail view of how you came from attorney to doing what you're doing now. And I don't think you know this, but I'm a progressive talent manager with a focus on consciousness, and I represent very, very gifted human beings. And a lot of the things we've spoken about being present, is really the only way they're going to book a job and the only way they're going to play their emotions authentically for an audience to help others awaken. And you're doing a play, Liberating Jesus, which is the perfect thing for spiritual Hollywood. And what would you say to an actor who's struggling? I mean, coming from having been an attorney to what you're doing now, what was it that woke you up?
Well, this happened many years ago in 1981. It was really an accident, Kate. I had a very spontaneous, powerful, over-the-top, multi-dimensional awakening, which opened me completely. I was utterly intoxicated with love. I was opened into the eternal. I was, you know, taken into a totally transcendent state. And interestingly, during this first awakening, I encountered God for the first time in my life, because prior to this moment, I was an agnostic, if not an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
But the presence of God was so overwhelmingly unmistakable to me that just dissolved in an instant. And here's the great, this leads into the play, actually. During this experience, which lasted in intensity about 3 or 4 weeks, totally over the top, transcendent state,
mm-hmm.
God asked me to do something. And what it was is that God asked me to tell the truth about Jesus. And my response to God was, but I don't know the truth about Jesus. I don't know what you're talking about. And interestingly, what I discovered was that God was utterly allowing. I was allowed to say no to God. So God repeated that request, and I continued to say no. Then 3 years later, I had a second awakening more powerful than the first. And it was during the second awakening that I went through an incredible experience of the crucifixion, basically where I was on the cross experiencing the crucifixion as Jesus experienced it. Mm-hmm. It was like in perfect detail. I could see the people, I could hear the sounds, I felt the pain, and all sorts of revelations came through in that moment, which forms the foundation of the play. Now, interestingly, although the play is a tremendous challenge to, and I don't mean a disrespectful challenge, but it's challenging to people who adhere to traditional Christian beliefs,
mm-hmm.
and adhere to the word of the Bible as literal.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, for just about anyone else, including atheists, in my opinion, will find so much meaning in this play as Jesus comes back to explain what really happened to him on the cross, what was his real mission, what was the point of his teaching, and what does he want us to get now? What's the point now? It's like, what does he want us to get now that we didn't get back then? Because we missed his teaching completely. We completely missed. His disciples missed his true message. And what happened was that they projected onto him their own divinity and saw him as the doorway to God, which is the foundation of all misunderstanding there.
Yes, I agree with you. The divinity like business.
That's right, and that's not what he was for. So pretty much like I've done a play reading in Salt Lake City to a group of lapsed Mormons, people who were involved in the Mormon church, but they dropped out of it. But they're very true seekers, lovers of God. I'm not kidding. Half the audience were weeping during the play because it touched them so deeply. My experience is everyone except people rigidly adhering to beliefs are genuinely longing for the truth somewhere within their soul.
Mm-hmm.
And this play actually touches people very deeply. And after the play is over, which is about 75, 80 minutes of the play, I leave the stage for about 5 minutes, and those people that would like to go home or leave the theater, they leave, and then I come back and we have an audience dialogue, questions and answers, and that's been incredible. People have loved it. They usually stay for, you know, around 40 minutes afterwards. It's a very fulfilling part of the evening that follows on from the play,
mm-hmm.
and because everyone is so open after the play, the questions and answers are at such a deep level.
I hope you're recording it.
Yes, we are.
I'm so glad.
And we're actually going to be filming the play on Saturday night and Sunday afternoon.
Wonderful. Where can we see that?
It won't be available for some time. But,
yeah, but at least you're capturing it. That's good.
We're capturing it, and we're hoping to take the play further. We'll see how it all goes.
Oh, I just really, really hope that it... I would like to see you performing it for your lifetime, as long as it doesn't wear you out.
Well, also, as long as it doesn't make someone terribly angry as well.
Well, that too. You'll be. It'll all work out the way it's meant to, if it's meant to be. And that's the way I believe it.
Yeah.
But, wow, thank you so very much for being my guest this evening. This has been an incredible interview. And unfortunately, I will not be able to see your play, but I just wanted everybody I know and all of my listeners to hear about it and have the opportunity to go and see it for me because I will be in a seminar. Pardon?
I'll bring it back just for you, Kate.
Please do. I was speaking to John Rotz today, and I asked him to do that very thing because I would like my clients to see it and everyone I know and to have that question and answer period with you afterwards would be so astoundingly insightful and bring such clarity about so many myths, because my son's father is a born-again Christian, and I'm not saying a bad thing about anybody who is at all, but he separated me from being his sister anymore. My son's father and I have been friends for 25 years. He became a born-again Christian, and because I'm an open-minded thinker, he thinks I'm the devil and has separated me from his life now, and it's very confusing for my son, and I just really wish that I could have him see your play so that he would find another way to look at things.
He told me that my
divinity is not inside of me, it is outside of me, and how dare I blaspheme Jesus by saying that I am divine. And that really hurt my feelings, because I am divine, I am divinity, and so is he. And he argued that neither of us are.
Well, his ego is not permitting him to come to the truth. And
right.
That Jesus would be aghast at his position.
Yes, thank you very much.
Absolutely
very aghast. Much indeed.
Jesus would walk into those churches and throw them all out of the church.
Yeah, like he did the change makers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're all lost, but we can't condemn or judge them.
No, no.
If we did, we wouldn't be in presence.
Right, and it's just a little frustrating to lose a good friend like that.
Don't forget, it was the Pharisees who turned against Jesus, and those people who are rigidly believing in their position and their beliefs are exactly like the Pharisees, and they would turn against me just as they did
right,
Jesus.
Right. Anything that is not as they feel and as they believe, and you know,
exactly.
I believe spirituality brings us together, unites us, and other things separate us. And thank you once again, Leonard,
for
bringing
us
all together in this wonderful path, hearing your calling, acting on it, going from attorney to this wonderful, wonderful vehicle you are, and doing God's work, basically, after being asked to. You weren't told to. You were asked to, and you said yes. And I'm so thankful that you're on my show. And keep on keeping on, and do bring it back to Los Angeles, and we'll fill up that theater every single performance for you. I just want to thank the listeners. And again, it's www.liberatingjesustheplay.com. Please go and see this play before it leaves town. And the last performance is Sunday at 2. The other performances are Friday at 8, Saturday at 8, with question and answers periods following after each performance. Please go and support this wonderful work, and enjoy yourselves, and let me know what you think. Again, thank you, Leonard. Is there anything you'd like to say?
Yes, there is. I want to say one thing.
Yes.
Kate, you are an extraordinarily generous and loving woman. That's all I want to say.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
I've never met you before, but I can feel it so much coming through. That
you
really are. You're wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, now let me see if I can close the show without crying.
Okay,
I just want everybody to take a deep breath, stand up really straight, and love yourselves, and know that the last six letters of attraction are action, and that starts with loving yourself. So thank you again, Leonard. Thank you again, listeners, and we'll be back next week. Have a great night. Have a great week, everyone, and a good show, Leonard. Good show
thank
to you.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye.